Hi, my name is Vanessa Farino, and welcome to the Creative Human Podcast. This is season four with the power of women in business. And our very next guest is someone who is so true to my heart, a lifesaver in all things business. I call her the AKA Business Fairy Godmother. I want to welcome you all to Natalie Levy, who is a business mentor, retreat host, and community builder. Welcome.
Hi, Vanessa.
Yes, AKA the Business Fairy Godmother. And you are all going to understand exactly why in just through this episode. All right. So, Natalie, let's just dive right in. Can you share a fun fact about you? Maybe something people wouldn't really know about you in general?
So I have like a list of fun facts that I tend to rattle off. One being that I was on a hip hop competition dance team in college, and I danced for much of my life. I was like on all the dance teams in high school. I carried that into college and I loved it so much. Another one I want to share, because I think that this actually might be even more surprising, is I have this really tough exterior, but I'm like really, really sensitive on the inside. And it kind of surprises people, even the people closest to me sometimes. Like, I forget how sensitive you are. And I'm like, me too.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for sharing those fun facts about you. Yes, you are such a sweet, sweet soul. I know, but as under your mentorship as one of your former students, I'm not going to lie, I totally see that, because we're like, ugh. She told us this, get your shit together.
I know.
A beautiful, beautiful soul. Can we talk a little bit about what life was like growing up? What was your upbringing like?
So I was raised by two European parents. So I think I have a slightly different experience than the average, let's say, you know, North American. And that my father came to the States when he was around 28 years old from Israel, but his family was originally from Europe and more recently living in Bulgaria. Whereas my mother came to the States when she was 11 from France. And so I feel as though I had this very like European upbringing, except for the fact that I was raised in Queens for the first, like, I guess, 10 years of my life. And that was definitely a really interesting experience, completely contrasted to the later part of my life where I grew up in Long Island, like two different worlds. In one, I was kind of the minority and, you know, I was like this red hair kid with freckles, and then I had to actually be really tough to like hold my own, you know, to like make sure that I was accepted in a sense. And then moving to Long Island, I had to also adapt, but in a completely different way. You know, I went from like, I don't know, like tackling boys in the schoolyard in like public school to going to another public school. Yes, but it had very private school vibes where like, you know, 10-year-olds were walking around with Tiffany bracelets, you know, and I bought like my first like Gucci bag. Like, the money that I saved up for like many, many moons, like when I was like 13 years old, you know, like just like finding ways to like fit in with the Joneses to an extent. And it's interesting because I knew how stupid it was even at a young age. It was never that I was like swept up in it, but I remember my father bargaining with my dad, basically being like, hey, Abba, which is like dad in Hebrew. I'm like, Abba, like, I know this is stupid and like you moved me here. So, you know, there's something to be said for that.
Take responsibility for your actions.
You know what I mean? Like, one minute you were telling me to stop rolling my R's in Queens, and now you're telling me to stop speaking with like this like Long Island Jappy accent. It's like, I really don't know what you want from me. I am a product of my surroundings. But anyway, so that's like a little interesting that it like look into my formative years. But also really importantly, and a lot of people who know me know this about me, my mom was diagnosed with cancer when I was 5 years old and my brother had just been born. And that was, yeah, like that completely shaped my childhood as well, as like anyone could imagine, because it was really aggressive. And my mother was just the most, my family were just extremely stubborn, for better and for worse. But in this case, in these types of situations, for better, because the doctors had given her a year to live, and she lived 6 years. You know, she really fought for her life, and that just witnessing that completely shaped my outlook on life. For one, it completely informs what I do now. You know, it taught me that life is not always long, but it's still worth fighting for. It taught me that you have to live as fully as you possibly can for the limited time that you're here, because you never know. My mom was 34 years old. I was 34 years old. I just turned 35. So it's just really crazy to think how young she really was, you know? And also, lastly, I think another really formative part of my childhood was watching my mother have entrepreneurial aspirations, but my father really like living those out, because he was in business for himself my entire life. And I'm grateful to have had that example of someone working for themselves, making their own way in the world, because I'm an incredibly insubordinate person and I'm not meant to be anyone's employee.
Well, now that you brought that up, are you able to share a little bit into what the transition was from working in the corporate world into having your own business?
Yeah, I mean, I always knew I was going to have my own business. If you ask me when I was like 7 years old what I wanted to be, I wanted to be an author. I just wanted to write books and essentially work for myself, you know? Like, then later on, in my teenage years, I realized I wanted to become a psychologist. That was my dream back then. And even in that, I had the aspiration of having my own private practice. You know, I was kind of like a visionary. I told my father in my teenage years, I was like, this is what I envision. I envision myself having this beautiful office where I'm the psychologist, but there are multiple professionals within the same practice, and we all create this holistic, like, integrative therapy for people. So there's like, if they need help with their finances, we have someone who's going to help them with their finances. If they need help with their, you know, eating habits and their nutrition, we're going to have someone to take care of that. And my father's like, that's not possible, you know, because at the time, nothing like that existed. Now we have like all these like wellness centers and these, you know, startup type wellness related companies that are basically doing this, creating a really integrative, holistic approach to health and wellness. But back then it didn't exist, you know? So that was my dream back then. And then going into grad school, I realized quickly that I just didn't have the desire to get my doctorate in academia. As interesting as it was to me, and as much as I enjoyed it, it wasn't going to allow me to be my fully expressed self. It was stifling to some extent. I mean, I enjoyed getting on Canva and creating graphics. Like, I love teaching curriculum. You know, there's just parts of me that wouldn't have fit in academics quite as well as I would have liked. And so also, I didn't want to be broke for 6 more years in grad school. Let's be serious. I decided at that point, I was very broke, you know, or as I like to say, pre-rich, but I really didn't have much to my name. And so going into business for myself at the time, especially not understanding the online landscape, not really understanding business, it didn't seem viable. So I wanted to get a job in a more corporate or business-oriented place. Initially, it was startups. I wanted to work for startups, but nobody would hire me because they're like, this doesn't make sense. Like, you just got your master's in applied psychology. Like, I don't know what you're doing here. Please go home. And I basically, long story short, sold myself into a sales job. And I felt strongly, and I knew this to be the case, that if you can learn how to sell, you can essentially do anything. Because if you can sell yourself into any position, you can figure it out later. And that's basically what I did. I was like, let me get myself into this company and I'll figure out the rest afterwards. And having a psych background helped. I was like, I know exactly what these people want to hear. Of course, I'm just ruthless and cutthroat through all of my answers. Of course, money is my number one motivator. Whatever you want, that's who I am. And yeah, so that's how I ended up in corporate. But it was also never a secret that I had aspirations to work for myself. I was like bullied by my manager about it for like the duration of my time there. And at the same time, there were plenty of people who supported my aspirations. People knew about them. It was never a secret. So the transition was bumpy. I'll give you that. But it was also long anticipated.
Would you say that there was also lots of personal healing through the process and transitioning to your business full time?
Yeah. I mean, the whole process, like holding the faith is the hardest part. Holding the faith when there's absolutely no proof around you that it's working at all is extremely difficult. And even if there is proof that it's working here and there, until your business is really running like a well-oiled machine, I don't know if this is the same case for everyone, but from what I know from people, you're just kind of like holding on to the edge of your seat, like praying, you know, like praying that it's going to amount to something. And so like just being in that place for honestly so long of like touch and go with my business working and really holding the faith, but then sometimes sobbing on my bed being like, why isn't anything working out for me? Like, I know I'm smart. Like, I know I'm creative. Like, I know that I have the ability to serve people. That was very, very challenging. But also it's that building of your resilience that is a non-negotiable when you're running a business. It's holding that faith because there will be so many people who doubt you. There will be so many reasons for you to doubt yourself. And I truly believe that perseverance is one of the key ingredients to making it, you know, yeah. Like, and so if you can hold the vision and just work towards it. You also, I think for me, like I had to let go of the timeline. So in terms of like healing and just like surrendering, because I think surrendering is such a big part of healing. If you're grasping onto things, if you're really, you know, attached to certain elements of who you are, who you believe yourself to be, stories, things like this, that's a sure way to keep yourself sort of spinning your wheels and running in place. But it was the act of surrendering over and over and over again that was part of the healing journey. And so there are so many other elements. I always tell people business is a vehicle to healing because you're going to have to face all your shadows, your rejection, the fear of rejection, fear of visibility. You're going to have to open up your throat chakra, you know, and like really like learn how to express yourself. So I worked through so many things, I would say, and like still continue to work through things through building my business. But I think learning how to surrender and holding the faith were two of the most pivotal things for me.
Thanks for sharing all that good stuff. Oh my gosh, that was a lot. I appreciate it. I know our listeners as well are going to be able to resonate because they're probably at different points and journeys of their entrepreneurship life and can definitely use that wisdom for their journey as well. I want us to pivot and talk a little bit about this thing that you taught me and my peers called the art of being delusional. Well, I put that type on it because I think it's so important, right? I think you tap just a tad into it in like when we were talking about things, but it's like being delusional, like talk to us about it. Cause I think the way you teach it is just so fabulous, but like grounding at the same time and inspirational. It's definitely one of the biggest takeaways I've taken by working with you.
Yeah. So when I talk about being delusional, I really just mean what I was expressing just before, in that there will be people who doubt you. There will be so many reasons for you to give up, for you to doubt yourself. You will experience failures and things will not work out. Like, that is just the nature of the game. No matter how brilliant you are, how talented you are, there's no winning without taking a few losses. Like, any person who has amounted to anything will tell you the same thing. But this act of believing in yourself above all else, above the proof, above what other people are telling you or other societal pressures, whatever it may be, that's the in quotes, as you coined it, the art of being delusional. It's this ability to anchor into your inner knowing. And so I think part of it is really tapping into your intuition, because I've never not known that I was coming here. I didn't know how I was going to come here. I didn't know when it was going to happen. I mean, by 35, I thought a few things would be different. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that. At the same time, because I've accomplished as much as I have up until this point, I know that there are things that are still on their way to me. And I want everyone to also recognize that that's part of the process, is really anchoring into what has happened, what you have done, what you have been able to accomplish, and internalizing that. I often tell people the difference between people who are confident and people who lack confidence and self-esteem is that the people who are confident, just they internalize all the good stuff. You tell them like, hey, you're so smart. They take that, they store that in a bank somewhere in their brain, you know, like, and they take all of the proof that they are so smart or that they are so talented that they can do it, and they carry that with them, and they give less importance to the things that are against them. Mm-hmm. The things that, you know, people are telling them about themselves that they don't believe to be true. Or maybe they are true, but then they fix them. You know, like it's like, okay, well, yeah, I don't like this about myself. That person's right. Let me work on this. But it's not going to override all the good stuff.
Right. Absolutely. Yes, I can definitely say that I use that motto. It's like, we're going to be delusional. Everything works in our favor and we're willing to put in the work. And if there's things that we currently don't like the way the climate is, right? It's like, how do we pivot? How do we change it? Because we do have the power to do that. So I love that about you.
I'd actually like to expand upon that a little bit, because there is something going around about magical thinking. And obviously there are plenty of people who are like very into it, because we have all these mantras for like lucky girl syndrome coming out on TikTok. And so there are people who are like camp magical thinking, and there are people who are like, this magical thinking can be very, very harmful. And so I think it really is about context, because when I think about magical thinking and how empowering it can be, which is what we're discussing, like this delusional way of like existing, like, no, I'm going to be successful against all odds, you know, it's like taking the personal responsibility, but only for the things that you can control. And so I think where magical thinking can get toxic is when there's things being perpetuated, like, oh, you got into that car accident, you must have attracted it in some way, right? Like, you just got diagnosed with this incurable illness, like it must be your karma. Yes, I understand how that can be really toxic, but that's not what I mean when I talk about magical thinking. To your point, it's about taking responsibility and ownership of the things that you can control, and internalizing the good stuff, being like, I did that. But also when things aren't quite going your way, like you said, approaching it with a solution-oriented mindset. Well, okay, I couldn't control X, Y, Z that happened to me. That was not my fault. The way that person treated me was not my fault. That circumstance outside of myself, I couldn't have done anything to prevent that per se, but I can decide that things are working out for me and create a meaning from this and carry that into my next move.
I always see that also as the power of rejection. I feel like our conversations can go on for hours.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Can we talk a little bit more about your business, a little bit more about the inspiration, and what is your why to the customers and clients that you are currently serving?
Above all else, my desire is that people love their lives, because I've learned, like I mentioned earlier, from a young age, that life is not always long. And personally, my desire is to do as much, be as much, see as much as I possibly can before I kick it, because I don't know when that is. You know, like, I know at 35, I've lived many lives. And if I were to go tomorrow, like, I'd be pissed. But also, I'd be able to look around and say, at least I loved my life. Like, at least I really pursued all of what I desired to pursue. Did I reach every single goal? No. And yet, like, I lived my life out loud, you know, and I want that for anyone who wants that too. And so I always tell people, like, I'm not a business coach because I love business. While I thoroughly enjoy it, like, I love strategy, I love the creativity that comes with being your own boss and, you know, the CEO of your own business, so to speak. Like, but that's not my why behind it. My why is that people like me, just, we're not meant to work for other people for the rest of our lives. That will not facilitate a freedom-filled and fulfilling life for us. And so that's why I went into business. Initially, my goal was to really serve people who are going through self-esteem issues and were wanting to build confidence, because that was my journey for so long. I went from very self-loathing. You know, I skipped over that whole part of like my childhood, but probably from 11 to I'd say like 21, I was like in this gradual upswing, but I was going through a very like just depressive periods. You know, I was still like an overachiever somehow. But when I was a teenager, I was like crying myself to sleep and was like pretty miserable and self-loathing. So my goal, even when I went to school to become a psychologist and was on that path, was really to serve women and children. And when I went into coaching, it was to help people build self-esteem and confidence. But again, the whole purpose of that is so that they can live more fulfilling lives, so that they can love their lives. And so that's like my real why that stems from childhood. And then in addition to that, it's my Aquarius in me, I suppose, but I really want to contribute to the best that I, in the way that I can, to a more equitable society. And part of that, having been a women's studies major, like minor really, for like my entire life from high school to college and beyond, you know, I always had this love for empowering women. I don't really like saying that I'm empowering, but like just women to feel empowered. I think part of building an equitable society is really distributing wealth into the hands of people who are often, have been historically most marginalized. And one of those groups is women. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Pivoting into all things about entrepreneurship, the good, bad, and ugly, which we've already dove into a little bit. Can we talk about maybe one of the proudest moments you've had thus far in your business?
That's so hard. I think one of the proudest moments that I experienced, and it was one of the first times I really felt this, so that's why I'm going to reference it, is when I created Babe Sue Brunch Club for the very first time. And the first time I tried to launch it was actually back in 2017. I did a whole photo shoot. I had this whole vision. It completely flopped. I sold one ticket. It didn't amount to anything. And the power of rejection, right? Because it really was for a reason. And it couldn't have worked out anyway, in any other way, right? So 2018 comes around. I launch it. I launch it for the second time, but it's the first full launch. And, you know, at first I was so nervous. My friends were like, let's get like 60 people through in the room. I'm like, 60 people? Like, I hope 15 people come. Like, what are you talking about? You know? This is also the power of community, because I had these people who were like in my ear being like, no, we believe in you. Like 15 people, 60 people. I'm like, you guys need to calm down. But in the end, we did sell out and there were at least 50 people there. And, you know, I had people messaging me being like, oh my God, can I still buy tickets? And I was like, no, we're going to get in trouble, because this is a whole long story. But there was somebody in the building who was trying to sabotage the event. Like, I wish we had time for me to tell that story, because it is wild. But so many things were kind of stacking up against me, against, you know, the event really coming to fruition. And then it was that moment that I was like hosting the panel. And I like looked around at all of these people and I just felt like, I can't believe I did this. It was this like moment, like this pinch me moment, where I was like, this is the best thing I've done up until this point. Mm. And that was a really pivotal moment for me.
Can we talk a little bit more about what is Babes Who Brunch Club? Talk about it.
Sure. So Babes Who Brunch Club was an event series for women in the pursuit of a healthy lifestyle and big dreams. That was the tagline. And it did attract a pretty creative and entrepreneurial crowd, and just women who like really valued community. I swear, like, people would walk into those events and leave those events being like, I've never been to something like this before. Like, everyone is so amazing and so warm and so accepting and so inviting. Like, best friendships were formed. There was a friendship that formed at one of the events. Like, she was just like the maid of honor in like there in her wedding. Like, you know, there were business partnerships formed. So many amazing things came from those community events. And they really were community events. They weren't just like in quotes events. The whole purpose of them was so that people could return on a monthly basis, or, you know, a few times throughout the year, and feel immediately dropped in at home, because they had familiar faces, because it really felt like, oh, this is a place where I can come and have a great time and meet amazing people and see people I already have connected with. And I launched that in November of 2018. And then a year later, I launched, and only it was able to host a few events before COVID shut us down, but I was able to launch in LA and build somewhat of a network out there. And yeah, they were amazing. They were a combination of panel-led discussions. So I'd bring in panelists and we'd talk about all kinds of topics, from, you know, self-love and becoming was the name of that event, to women's intimate health and pleasure. And that event was called Flower Power. And I had women in the sex tech industry talk about the gap between, you know, the pleasure gap, so to speak, and a variety of things. And people came from like out of state for that event. Like, it was just, it just covered so many topics that I think were so important for women to be discussing. And then sometimes it was just like brand activation. So we'd have like a sound healing, Reiki, tarot reader, different brands would come and set up like booths and have just like an experiential thing happening. So yeah, I want to bring them back, but we'll see.
Okay. Well, we're just going to start your wait list now to all of the listeners that are listening from all over the world. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Awesome. Can you talk a little bit about maybe a situation in business that really taught you something valuable?
Oh my God. So many things. The first thing, like I mentioned just before about Babesy Brunch Club, I wasn't in a position to really see it through in 2017 as I was in 2018. And so just knowing that just because something didn't work initially doesn't mean it's never going to work. If something is really on your heart and pulling at your heartstrings and you know it's going to come to fruition in one way or another, just know that just, yeah, again, to reiterate, it might not have worked out initially, doesn't mean it's never going to, right? Sometimes like just puzzle pieces didn't fit at the time and they're going to fit differently later. And just for my entrepreneurs who are listening, who are like launch averse, because I know people like are terrified of launching. I think another instance in my business where I looked around and was like, holy shit, I did this, was when I launched my first group program. And that was extremely challenging for my, like, it was just really challenging to go through and like learning that you have, again, you have to hold the faith. There are plenty of times where I was like, oh my God, there's two people in the room. No one's going to sign up. Oh no, early bird finished. Like people haven't signed up. Who's going to pay full price? There were a lot of like moments where I was like freaking out that like my boyfriend Damian was looking at me being like, who are you? You know, you are not my like positive thinking. All everything's working out, girlfriend. Like, where is your magical thinking, Natalie? Like, what the fuck, you know? And I was just like oscillating between like full faith and just like freak out mode, you know? And just wanting to normalize that for people. And also at this point, I've launched many times over and it gets easier every single time. So again, also just because something feels really hard or really challenging and it's very confronting doesn't mean it's bad. There's a light at the other end of the tunnel, so to speak.
I appreciate you talking about that because a lot of people, I think, do freeze or have like a paralyzing moment when it comes to launch. They work so hard up to get to that moment. And then launch mode comes and they're like, day two, it's not working out, right? It's like,
oh my God, yes. They're like, it's 2 days. Nobody knows. Like for you, you've been working on this for months and ideating on it, et cetera, et cetera. So for you, it's like old news. People still are like, I don't even know what you're talking about on day two, even week two, you know? So it's really about making sure that you, again, about perseverance, you just can't take no in quotes from as an answer. Like no from the universe is like, all right, well, what can I do to make this a yes? Right. And so when people ask me like, well, what if it doesn't work out? You know, when I hosted my first retreat, that was an initial question from someone wide-eyed, looked at me like, you invested $4,000 already? What if it doesn't work out? I was like, well, that's not an option.
It's going.
Like, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to make it work. It might not look exactly as I expected it to, but it's gonna work. You know, like that's my mindset.
Are you able to talk a little bit about, for anybody who might be listening, who might think or might have this like perfectionism type of mentality and how that might not necessarily be working in their favor?
Oh my God, perfectionism is so boring. Next. No, like the thing about perfectionism, it's really a defense mechanism. And I understand it, like coming from again, part of my childhood, didn't go into this part, but my father thought that criticizing you would motivate you. And for me, it did, because I was like, you don't think I can do this? Like, just watch, you know what I mean? So that was my personality, thank goodness, because it wasn't easy. But I think a lot of times, like this perfectionism tendency is formed as a response to our upbringing, you know, whether it's our parents or just a parental or authority figure. It's a response to always wanting to perform, always wanting to be on, making sure that it's like, in quotes, perfect, although we all know logically that that's never going to be the case. I think it's important to recognize that perfectionism is really just anxiety tied up in a pretty bow. A lot of times your procrastination or perfectionism is procrastination, which is really stemming from anxiety. So if you can identify what is causing you anxiety and like what, where is this anxiousness coming from? And ideally like the root cause, which there are many ways to go through this process, but it's just putting this out there for anyone who wants to start the process. You know, that can be really, really helpful in getting over your perfectionism. I personally, I don't suffer in quotes from perfectionism whatsoever. I procrastinate. Yeah, I procrastinate, but things don't have to be perfect before they go out. Like I really have adopted the motto that done is better than perfect, progress over perfection, you know, and it really works in my favor. Sometimes I put things out super messy. And I'm just like, let's just see what happens. But it at least it gets out there and then I can figure it out while I'm going through the process or, you know, it doesn't work out. And then I figure it out later. Okay, well, I did this, this, and this, and I didn't do X, Y, Z. So that's how I'm going to approach it next time.
Yeah. Oh, that was like such a relief. I can't tell you how many people I come across and or listeners who they're like, oh, I'm just stuck in this whole thing of perfectionism. And I'm like, that's like a foreign language to me. And I know when I started working with you, you were like completely the opposite way of like forward thinking when it came to that matter. It's like, okay, but you're not doing anything. So it's just all collecting dust. So how does that help you? So let's move forward and pivot and do and da-da-da-da. So all the things. So I appreciate you sharing your thought process on that. Okay, amazing. Can you talk a little bit about any future aspirations for the business? What are you excited about? What's coming up? How can we support you?
Mm-hmm. So I really love my group experiences. I'm currently leading a group through Business Magic Mastery, which is my signature offer for entry stage entrepreneurs, people who are either bringing idea to fruition for the very first time, or people who have been making money, just haven't really cracked the code on how to do it consistently yet. That's who Business Magic Mastery is for. And I love this program because it's so comprehensive, but I will be launching again the second half of the year. So around August, it'll start coming to light again, and we're going to lead another group through that. So I'm really excited about launching it twice, because historically it's been like a one-time thing. It's like, you're either in, or you wait till next year.
Right.
And this year I decided to create two cohorts. So I'm really excited about that. I do believe Activated is going to be coming back. So Activated is what Vanessa was in with me, which is more of a mastermind. So there was some programming, but it's really for women who were already good at what they were doing, but perhaps wanted to scale their business through like more multi-touch offers or refining things, automating some things. And so I'm looking forward to that. What I'm really, really, really excited about, in addition, I'm excited about everything, right? Like, that's the goal. Like, let's be excited by your business.
All of the things.
If you were at the Power of Women Summit, I went on a whole rant about how you can treat your business like a party. But I really do want business to feel fun, and I want people to feel really lit up by their offers. And so I am excited about everything. But one thing that's long overdue is a membership. And I really want to create, and I have been creating, and I'm going to be announcing a membership that is really geared towards taking the question out of your marketing, you know, creating sort of plans for people to just start putting their business out there with more confidence and not wondering like, what am I doing? Because that's the number one thing I see holding people back, is really not knowing how to go about their marketing plans. So I want to make it fun and easy. And I'm going to be hosting a few more VIP retreats this year. And I have aspirations to host at least one while I'm in Europe this summer.
Okay, sign me up for all the things. Thanks. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Awesome. And finally, what does it mean to be a creative CEO to you?
Doing whatever the fuck I want. I hope I can curse. I know that's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, I think for me, I want to like live my life creatively. You know, I want to be in this ebb and flow of work and play at every day. Like, it's not like one day is ever dedicated to only one. Well, maybe not ever, but it's typically not just dedicated to one thing. Like, I go out, I take a walk, I might go to the beach and I'll sit down on my laptop and I'll do some work. And I really like to flow creatively throughout my days. and getting to be a bit innovative. You know, I've been putting things out there for a while, like events before people. It was like at the beginning stages of people talking about the importance of community. And like I was there doing the thing and like really going out and building community. And that was a huge catalyst for my business. Now, I wouldn't be where I am currently if I didn't start with the event series, you know, and it was a longer burn. So for any of my clients who are listening, I often tell them like events aren't the first thing to necessarily do if you're trying to make money right away. They're one of the things that you can do that offers like more texture and more momentum for your business. But that's a whole other thing. but the reality is like that was still at the beginning stages of this movement to like build this community out. And like even the VIP retreats, I'm not the first person to ever do these like types of retreats, but now I see everyone doing like these types of experiences, which is beautiful. I think that the world is moving a bit offline and into the in-person. And so I guess part of what I'm saying about being a creative CEO is being the person who leads the charge to the best of your ability. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. I've never reinvented the wheel. I've just taken what I've seen out there and like made it my own. And that's what I want for everybody. Like none of us are so special. Like most of the things that we do have been done before, but they haven't been done in the way that you're going to do them. And so just do the things that you really want to do.
Insert mic drop. Awesome. Thank you so much, Natalie, for being one of our guests here. To all of our listeners, please stay tuned. We have other episodes for season 4 for The Power of Women in Business. We'll see you all soon. Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you.